So I'm going to invite Karen up.
And she's really good at leaving the reservation.
You know, it's fun having your friends in the audience when you're preaching, and they know I'm a bit of a rebel.
And people are shocked, and she's laughing and cheering you on.
It's true.
Yeah.
Have fun.
Yeah.
Do you want some water?
No, that'll just make me nauseated. So, okay, first, I hate microphones, so I'm going to try to not fiddle and futz, and I have long hair. So I want you to know that I actually had awesome remarks prepared. Awesome, like they were great. And they were in my laptop computer, which I dropped on my big toe at 5 this morning. You would think that the landing on the toe would prevent the computer from totally dying, but no. So then I had no remarks, none. But the only thing worse than that was I pick up Elsie and Brian. I'm like, I haven't slept in a week, you guys. So we get in the car. We're hurtling down the freeway to get to the airport. And Brian grabs me. Karen! I'm like, what? He goes, I don't have any shoes on. What? Shoes. So then he starts giving me directions, like I don't know how to get back. I'm like, stop. So anyway, so I had no remarks. He had no shoes. Now we have no computer. I don't know. I think that whatever happens next, it's all bets are off. So I'm going to kind of wing it. And you are going to look supportive in the audience. There it is. All right, good. So we all know our goals. So what I'm going to do tonight is I'm going to talk a little bit about, oh no, I am not photogenic, so don't do that again. No, it's bad.
I might have to do 10 more
to, okay. Yeah.
Somebody bribe her.
So what I'm going to do tonight is I'm going to tell you a little bit about how I came to write a book, because that wasn't in the grand plan. And then at the end of this, we're going to be here maybe 10 more minutes. I'm not going to talk for long. You guys can all be like, oh, hooray. And then at the end, I'm going to actually read a poem that I wrote about 6 years ago. And this seemed like a really good idea yesterday, and now it feels like a really bad idea, because I'm going to cry. But again, supportive audience. There you are. But in all seriousness, sometimes I'm sad in these things, and there's the person who wrote the book, and I am not coming to you in any place of strength. I'm not. I'm actually in a really pretty weak place, actually, at the moment. And so come along for the ride. So I didn't set out to write a book. One afternoon, Brian shanghaied me, and he's like, you need to come to my Psalms class, because at the time I was editing his sermons, which meant, I corrected the typos and stuff like that. And he said, it will help you edit my sermons if you know what I'm trying to say. Funny how that works. And so come to the Psalms class so that you know what I'm going to teach, because I'm going to then teach it in big church. And so then you'll already know the material so you can help me edit my sermon. So I thought, okay, that sounds like a good idea. So I went to the Psalms class, and that was going to be a 12-week class. We were going to do in that 12 weeks what we're going to do in short order this weekend. So you're going to study the passages out of Samuel, where we looked a little bit at Hannah. You look at the poetry that Hannah writes. You learn about how it is that she was experiencing that tension and the dissonance, and how it was that God met her in that space. So we did that over the course of 12 weeks. We're doing it in a couple days here. And so that was the class. And so I went, and for 12 weeks, I studied Samuel, and we read Psalms, and I wrote a lot of bad poetry. But it was, but I got kind of addicted to it. I mean, it was like the more you got in to this process, the more you started, I started to figure out just how much of a front I was putting on all the time. And so instead of stopping at the end of 12 weeks, I just kept going. And I went for 12 months. I went for a whole year. I started at Psalm 1 because I'm not very creative. So the idea of like figuring out where to start, no, just there's one, and then I'll go to two, and we'll just keep going. And so I did that for 12 months. And at the end of that 12-month period, I could not believe the transformation that had gone on in my life. In the course of that year, I came face to face with myself in a way that I had never done. I'd been a follower of Jesus most of my life. But as I studied the Psalms, as I wrote my own stories from those poems, I set aside the good girl that I always was. I set aside the good Christian woman, the victorious Christian woman. I set aside my ability to put my best foot forward. And not putting your best foot forward, you see yourself maybe in some ways for the first time, and that is not fun, and it's not often pleasant, but it's real. And it captures your own sense of, I'm a unique individual with a unique story that has meaning, and I'm not gonna get to it if I'm only telling the good stuff. So over the course of that 12 months, I began to just sort of, you know, scrub off all of the posturing and all of the fake language, the Christianese. I just refused to use it, and I drilled down as deep as I could go into these Psalms and my own experiences with them. And the thing is, the Psalms, the more you get into them, you realize just how raw these poems are. I mean, David and Aesop, even those poems, these are not writers that hold back. These are not writers who are presenting their best version of themselves. This is not Instagram, you know, it's, you know, ancient Instagram. This is like, you know, take an ugly picture and put it up there. You know, ugly crying, not the kind of pretty crying, you know, that they do in the movies, but the kind, well, you guys know, right? It's that. And the more that unfolded for me, the more I could see that this book just sort of drips with human emotion. And for me, as Brian showed or talked this evening, they modeled for me how to talk to God, how to tell God all the stuff that was going on in me, how to just get it all out, decades full of stuff. And so over the course of that year, I encountered Job in a different way, and Jonathan, David's Jonathan, Hannah, of course, Abigail, was one of my favorites. She was actually married to a guy whose name was Stupid. Like, that's just, you can't make that up. You cannot make that up. Like, that's just, I love my husband, by the way. He's a great guy, but just that always makes me laugh, so. And even Tamar, not the Tamar that is related to Judah, but the Tamar that is related to Absalom, which I'm gonna get to that at the end because that's where my poem is going. So, the Psalms brought me every day to Jesus in a different way, a new way. They explained where God was during a period in my life where I couldn't find him. I buried a friend that year with the Psalms, Psalm 23, Psalm 16, Psalm 34. It was incredible how that year unfolded. But these Psalms did more than just help me find my own voice, because the more I spilled it, the more I realized that authentic voice was the threshold of the intimacy with God that I had always wanted. And, you know, vulnerability is hard, and you can only kind of go there if you feel like you got a good shot at being okay when you cross over that threshold. And I think we all have learned, you know, we're all ladies of a certain age, and, you know, the world is not particularly kind to vulnerable women. And so we learn how to buffet ourselves, and we learn how to toughen the edges, and some of that is necessary and good and healthy, but some of it, at least for me, created a gap between me and how I could understand and hear God. It limited what I could hear from God, and therefore how I understood who God thought I was. What did God think of me? Did God like me? I know he loved me. He loves everybody. Does he like me? I don't know. How do you learn that? How do you learn that not because somebody tells you that in a sermon, but you've learned it because it's come from somewhere deep inside of you and has spilled out in a way that makes it impossible for you to ever really doubt it ever again. And that was that year in the Psalms. And that's the part that really sort of caught me by surprise. I didn't expect that to happen. I expected, you know, to learn a lot, and I expected to maybe learn some things about myself. I didn't expect God to start talking to me. And when I say that, I you know, people say, well, how did that happen? Do we need to be concerned about you? And the answer to that is yes, you do. But there were lots of ways that God, in the course of that year, talked to me, spoke with me. Sometimes it was with thoughts that were completely outside of my own. Those were weird. But it happened. There were times when a friend would come alongside of me and speak into my life in a way that the hair on the back of my neck would go up, and I knew that fast, I'm on holy ground. There was times when it was just a quiet presence that was different from the normal ebb and flow of life. And it wasn't like this was every day. You know, I had days where I was elated and excited and joyful, and I had days when I couldn't get myself out of bed with depression. The whole spectrum was covered in the course of that year. I had days where I felt like God was as real as if he was sitting on the chair next to me. And there were weeks where nothing. You keep going. You keep praying. You keep hoping. You keep processing. You keep taking the journey on faith that God's going to arrive again at some point. And so I say that because sometimes I think, especially in a sort of a collapsed down format like we're in this weekend, the temptation can be to think it's almost kind of like the 5 steps to intimacy with God. Woo, you know? And it isn't that. I mean, God, you know, he doesn't like to be controlled. And so this isn't a control mechanism. This isn't a, you know, take the steps and magical happen. It's an opening of ourselves to a process that we choose not to control, but to enter into anyway. And we see what God does. And that was my year, and it was an extraordinary one. And you know, the truth is, as I finished my, so I did that year in the Psalms, all 41 of them, and then the following 6 months, I ended up just writing it all out. I'm going to tell you why. That's a different story. And as I put the final touches on my book, which was an early version of what you've seen, it was like this curtain dropped. You know, like those big stage curtains, you know, like the big, they don't let any light in. And I haven't been able to find my way back since. And I don't feel frightened. I don't feel like somehow God's angry or disappointed. I'm just back in that space of dissonance. So I'm going to be really listening to you tomorrow. Because I'm here asking the Lord, maybe there's somebody here who's going to say something or share something that's going to bring some light through my curtain while I'm waiting for the Lord to bring new revelation to the things that he's been doing in my life for the last 5 years. So here we are. I have a book of bad poetry. You're going to get to read some of it if you want. If you don't, it makes for a great coaster. So you go for it. You are sitting at the threshold of starting or maybe not, and it's entirely up to you how that unfolds over the next day or 2 days or weeks or months. So I wish you Godspeed. I'm excited that I'm going to get to hear some of it from some of you maybe over the next couple of days. And if I can, you know, be of any encouragement along that process over the next day or two, please let me know, because I would love to. So I want to close with a lament poem that I wrote. gosh, this was a bad idea. Okay.
This is a bad idea.
This is a great
idea.
This
is a bad idea.
Okay, so I've never read this poem out loud. It's not in my book. And I don't have it because it's in your computer.
Shoot.
So I actually do have a, I do have it. If I have to, I can dig it out of my phone. Because I had to like make notes on the plane. So, but so here's the background of the story. So on Sunday, it was the first Sunday of June 2011, and I was. Doesn't matter.
I'm not dropping this on your toe.
No, no. Okay. So Brian was teaching this Sunday morning from Samuel 13. Which is the story, I don't know if you're familiar with it or if everybody is familiar with it, but it's the story that where Amnon, who is David's son, he wants Tamar, which is his half-sister. And so he lures her into his room, and he rapes her. And David's other son, Absalom, finds out about it, because Tamar says, hey, you know, Amnon raped me, and now he's going to cast me aside, which is going to make me an outcast, right? And so she, you know, this can't happen. And so then, basically, as that story unfolds, nothing actually happens for Tamar. Like, later, Absalom will kill Amnon for the rape of his sister. It's really not even about that. It's about political expediency, though, right? Why it is that Absalom ends up, you know, killing Amnon. But in the middle of this story, you've got this woman. She's a princess, right? Her dad is King David. Her brother rapes her. And the story at that point ends with this sentence that says, so Tamar lived out her years desolate, a desolate woman in Absalom's house. This was, everybody remember this story from Sunday school? Yeah. You're like, okay. We'll skip right past that one. But, you know, and as a woman, that's a tough story on a lot of levels. For me, that's a tough story because I have abuse in my background. I have spiritual abuse. I also have sexual abuse. And one of the things that Brian said in that message was, when you have wounds that can't close, they're constantly staying open, it's the worst kind of thing because you can't heal and move on. And part of what happened to me was because of the people that were involved, I couldn't say what happened. They were people who outranked me in power and authority and spiritual authority and spiritual reputation. And people's careers and churches were on the line. And that set off the course for me for a lot of years of feeling expendable. You know, why didn't God come to Tamar's rescue? I still don't have a good answer for that. There isn't a good answer for that. Right? And so over the years, I kind of put some of these things aside and let them sit. And as they always do, you know, they fester. So that morning, we had communion that morning. I'll never forget that because I tried. And I got about halfway through and I had to leave and I just chucked it in the bushes and I went home. Because I couldn't worship a God who let Tamar live a desolate woman for the rest of her life. So I went home and I wrote this poem. And I'm going to read this, I hope, and then I'm going to tell you what happened after that. So my poem is titled Tamar, and it's subtitled Expendable, and then picture in parentheses the word Sunday, because it was a Sunday that I wrote this poem. So Tamar, princess of Israel, your beauty is a curse. Just another thing some man will use. Tamar, abandoned by God, crushed beneath a brother's weight, and a pawn in a father's restoration. Tamar, robes rent, bleeding, screaming in grief for a champion, but God can't be bothered. Tamar, silent and alone, the scapegoat for the family's good. God doesn't care that you'll never sing again. Tamar,
destined for ruin, struggling to carry the impossible weight of being expendable. Tamar, there will be no end to your grief. There will be no justice for your pain. Healing is for husbands, fathers, and sons. Father, you should have named me Tamar. So that was Sunday. That was a Sunday. And and I sort of sat in that space. It was dark. I didn't have much that I could talk to about, or many people that I could talk to about that. I told you that's the first time I've ever read that poem out loud. So you guys are the only ones who've ever heard it. And then a funny thing happened. As I sort of marinated in that space, God did what he always did for me that year, was he arrived. It took a couple of days, but on Tuesday, I sat down and I wrote the second part of my Tamar poem. And I wanted to read you guys this poem today because it shows so clearly what that transformation, at least it does for me, what that transformation can look like when God does honor that space that we've carved out. And again, there are no guarantees, but our God is good. And so this was the second half of my poem that I wrote after a couple of days of looking into the face of Jesus and remembering, you know, who God actually is. So this is called Beloved, and it's parentheses on Tuesday. Tamar, princess of Zion, your beauty is so piercing it rends the heart of sinful man. Tamar, Azer, image bearer, crushed beneath another's sin, entrusted with another's restoration. Tamar, I see your robes divided. I see your blood flow down. Spend your grief fully, Tamar, for I will bear full witness. Tamar, entombed in silence, desolation does its glorious work to make you the song I love to sing. Tamar, destined for glory, look to your right and see whose yoke you share. Tamar, I will wipe away each tear. I will redeem the wasted years. Your scars, like mine, will heal. Daughter, I did name you Tamar. So, may over the next couple of days or months or years, you begin to find your voice in God's heart in the psalm.